Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 8th day of January 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll also be joined today by Michael Cordonier, of a soybean and corn advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois, to take a look at the South American prospects, in particular of Argentina. And in the second half hour of the program, Commodity Week comes up, and we'll do Brazil, that with Corey Melby. He lives and works there. Along the way today, we'll hear about the weather forecast, too, from Eric Snodgrass of Agrible, right here on this Friday edition of Illinois Public Media's Agricultural Programming. You can find us online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Futures finished the day higher, mostly for Friday afternoon. March contract in the corn pit up $3.57, up 4 cents for the day. The May at 3.62 3/4, up 4 1/4. July corn 4.5 higher at 3.69. September at 3.74 3/4, up 4.5 as well. Next year's December up 4 1/4 at 3.83. Soy complex January beans 2.5 higher at $8.79 1/2. The March at 8.65 1/4, 3/4 higher. The May up 3/4 at 8.68. July up a penny, 8.74 3/4. The settlement price in November beans 3/4 cents higher, $8.78 1/2. The settlement bean meal futures up $1.70 at $2.67.90. Bean oil 29.45, up a penny for the day. Wheat futures soft red up a dime at $4.78 1/2. July at $4.90 1/4, up 9 3/4. And the hard red July at $4.92 1/4. That's 10 cents higher for the day. Live cattle futures nearby contract at 132.82 1/2, down 70 cents at this hour. April at 133.75, down 55 cents. Feeder cattle are trading $4.60 lower at 159.22 1/2 at the end of their day. The March at 156.60, down $4.35. And the lean hogs in the February contract, $59.92 1/2, up 37.5 cents. Ethanol futures are $1.33 1/3, their opinion 3/10 higher. Crude oil at $33.06 a barrel is down 21 cents, and the wholesale price of gasoline is 2 1/10 lower at $1.12 4/10 cents. This, of course, is Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
For the Illinois State Water Survey, this is State Climatologist Jim Angel. First, a quick look at 2015. December in Illinois was considered the warmest on record and 10.7 degrees above average. It was also the second wettest December on record with 6.7 inches, 4 inches above average. The second wettest December combined with the wettest June on record made 2015 the sixth wettest year on record with 48.5 inches. That's 8.5 inches above average. On the other hand, the warmest December was canceled out by the eighth coldest February on record to make 2015 in Illinois only 0.4 degrees above average. So far this winter, snowfall is close to average north of Interstate 80 with amounts in the range of 4 to 10 inches and up to 20 inches along the Illinois-Wisconsin border, but the snowfall totals drop off rapidly southward. Many areas in central Illinois have seen only 1 to 4 inches, and no significant snow has been reported south of Interstate 70. Up to this point, January has been close to average on temperatures with no significant rain or snow. But that could change this weekend with the approaching winter storm first bringing rain and then 1 to 4 inches of snow across Illinois. The total water content from this storm ranges from only 1/4 inch in northwestern Illinois to over 1 inch in southeastern Illinois. Next week will be colder with highs in the teens and 20s in the north and in the 20s and 30s in the south. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist for the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Well, on this Friday afternoon, let's take a look at the marketplace with Mike Zuzulo for the 8th day of January. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Michael. Thank you for being with us.
My pleasure, Todd. Good to be with you again.
Well, you started to tell us a little bit about some of the monthly and weekly trades and what they look like on the charts. How did we finish up today?
You know, wheat, the last time we had back-to-back higher days of 5% or more like we had yesterday and today in lead month soft red futures was back in October of last year, late October of last year, Todd. And those are gains that actually held. You know, we've gotten so used to strong surges in the market lasting about 12 to 18 hours and then being pulled right back out. So it was one of those days, and especially the second half of the week here, that was quite different than what we've experienced here in the last several months. And that's on top of the fact that we had a 5% sell-off in the equity markets and a 10% sell-off in the crude this week. So nice to see the wheat leading again. I think the soft red wheat holiday rain and drowned out areas are starting to get some attention this week, belated attention this week, since we're coming back from the holiday, and also knowing that we're going to get some winter wheat acres next week from USDA. Also, the hard red wheat areas are looking cold and dry now for the next 10 days, Kansas, Nebraska especially. Biggest thing, obviously, is what we talked about this morning, I think, is that we just held those lows, spurred some short covering, and we also saw at the same time the Ukrainian wheat price jump earlier this week, too. So those two things laid the groundwork, and then we started to, I think, look at some U.S. weather, and that actually gave us the ability to hold on to these gains.
Yeah, so the black sea wheat has been suffering from some severe cold temperatures, but not very much snow cover, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And between the soft red and the hard red, which kind of cover the global commodities set, at least out of Chicago anyway. Both of those on the weekly charts posted outside up weeks. That was kind of nice and interesting.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, back on the Ukrainian wheat, especially as UKR Agricultural Consult came out earlier this week, I want to say it was right at the beginning of the week, and really surprised me that the market didn't take note of it. But I guess given what the dollar and the crude oil and the stock markets were doing, shouldn't have. But anyway, they cut their new crop exports for the 16-17 season by down to 8.5 million tons, which would be about a 40% cut from what they did or are going to do this current season, and mainly due to this weather that you just mentioned. So I think that was a big reason why we saw the Black Sea change its prices, and we're now only about $2 to $3 a ton premium, and that's including the cost and freight. So very different look in terms of our price at the Gulf versus Ukrainian price versus last 6 or 9 months.
Did the soybeans post an outside up week too? They did, didn't they?
They tried. I think you could call it that. It wasn't as good as I would have liked to have seen. it would have been nice to see them close a little bit better than steady. Yeah, you're going to be higher on the week in March by just right at a penny. It was a nice trading week for the beans, given that they're thought of as the leader to the downside in this environment. Probably the biggest thing that we saw late in the week in the soybean complex was the idea that South America's production really is more of a coin toss. It really is more up in the air, thanks to some private work down in the southern hemisphere and also the USDA attaché report. And keep in mind, Todd, this is kind of a market mover here from a supply-demand standpoint, because, you know, we've got world-ending stocks on the December report at 82.6 million tons, USDA's number. If we shrink the crop 3 million tons and add up demand to the point where the ending stocks go down 3 million tons, we're only up about 2 million tons from where we were in the 14-15 marketing year, just around 80 million tons or 79.6. So this would give the market the idea, I think, that the crop is shrinking, the supplies are going down, and they don't have that heavy reliance upon a negative sentiment that beans are pressing the rest of the market lower anymore. So this becomes, like we talked about this morning, I think a real fundamental driver, and that would then be a technical driver in the bean complex. complex next week.
And while the corn had a good day today and finished four higher, not enough to finish the week higher, just a little bit lower down, what, a bit more than a penny, I think, on the week?
That's right. I think the weekly export sales, the weekly export inspections, and then the ethanol data and the crude oil, namely the unleaded gas, lean stocks build much higher than the trade was expecting. They were just too much for the corn to really get excited about. And I think when I talk to people and colleagues and even producers at this stage of the game about the markets, I think they're most negative, the corn market right now. Even though what we talked about this morning about the lower yields, I think the trade realizes and the producers know the trade realizes that there's a lot of corn to be sold here in the short term. And I don't think the producer's expecting any favors at all from the corn. They could see a bullish surprise in beans because USDA tends to do that for us in beans. So I just think all around corn is just not looked upon very nicely from pretty much all the market segments. And I think we probably picked up some of that sentiment today too.
Interesting enough. Any final word before I let you go for the day?
I'd say watch the cattle and hogs next week too, because we have broken through some key moving averages, short-term moving averages and trend lines. There's some gaps in the market below us, quite a bit below us in the feeders and the fats. And we've got January fats going off here in the not too distant future. So we could have a sharp break to the downside led by the feeders continue unless we get something surprising on USDA's meat side of their report next Tuesday.
Thanks so much, and have a great weekend, Mike.
You too. Thanks, Todd.
Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He is in Atchison, Kansas. Let's turn our attention now directly to South America. Earlier in the week, I made a phone call to Michael Cordonier of Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois. He's a known specialist on South American crops. I asked him about the beginning of the growing season and what the weather conditions have brought us to at this point in both Brazil and Argentina.
Well, it's been a very extreme season in South America, all caused by El Nino, of course. Southern Brazil has been inundated with torrential rains ever since September, October, but it's been just the reverse in central Brazil and northeastern Brazil. They've been very hot and dry. September, October, November, December, the rain started to pick up in late December, and now it's raining good in January, but it's coming very, very late. So the result was soybean planting in central Brazil was quite delayed, and a lot of the early soybeans actually had to be replanted due to poor germination and poor plant populations. And in fact, farmers in Mato Grosso just have been granted an extension. They can plant their soybeans up until January 15th, when prior the limit to planting was December 31st. So that's to allow some of the guys to replant now that it's starting to rain again. The result has been, estimated poor yields for any of the early maturing or early plant of soybeans in Mato Grosso. Now, they just started to harvest some of the first beans. Of course, yields are disappointing. Anything that's dry land, even the irrigated soybeans, and there's a few irrigated in Mato Grosso, they're lower than expected as well because it was just too hot and too dry, and the irrigation system couldn't keep up with the water demand for the crop. And in northeastern Brazil, they're just now finishing planting over there. Now, that region has about 10% of all the soybeans in Brazil, and they usually plant later than the rest of the country, but this is extremely late. And it's all been caused by El Nino.
So northeastern, this would be what, the state of Tocantins or somewhere in that area?
Yeah, it would be Bahia, Tocantins, Piauí, Maranhão. Bahia is the biggest of those four.
And then I know you do travel some. When was the last time you were on the ground?
I haven't been there this year, but we'll go down here in a couple of weeks, take a look, see what the yields look like for the beans, and also to assess what might happen to the Safrinha corn. In fact, there's a lot of interest in Brazilian corn production, and about 70-75% of their corn will be planted after the soybeans are harvested. And the soybean planting was delayed, so the harvest is being delayed. I'll give you an example. As of today, less than 1% of Mato Grosso soybeans have been harvested. Last year, about 2% were harvested at this time. And this is supposed, I think the harvest is going to keep going slower than normal, at least for a couple of weeks. So that's going to slow down the Safrinha corn planting. And the concern is, of course, that if you plant your Sauvignon corn late, you may run into the dry season before the crop has a chance to fill the ears. Now, the planting window for Sauvignon corn in central Brazil, they say, closes about February 20th. But you can stretch it till maybe the first week, maybe the first 10 days of March. But you're really pushing it if you stretch it. Now, the last 4 years, the rainy season has been extended and has resulted in record big corn yields. So Brazil's got very big corn production right now. But that's the exception. It usually doesn't have an extended rainy season. Usually the rains end about late April, early May. And if you plant your soybeans in early March and it stops raining, you know, 45 days later, you end up with a very low yield. But like I said, it hasn't happened in 4 years. Who knows if it's going to happen again this year or not?
The size of this area is very large. For instance, I believe the one primary producing state, and you'll have to tell me how much of the Brazilian soybean crop Mato Grosso actually produces, is roughly the size of the Midwest, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, Mato Grosso produces about 30% of Brazil's soybeans. And you're right, it's the size of the Midwest. If you would superimpose it on the Midwest, it would go from Columbus, Ohio, to Grand Island, Nebraska, and from Duluth, Minnesota, to Nashville, Tennessee. It's really big. Now, inside that state, it's not all soybeans, of course. There's pockets of soybeans scattered around the state. The main area is sort of the north-central part of the state. And unfortunately, that was the driest area up until late December. Now, the second biggest state is Paraná. They do about 18% of Brazil's soybeans, and they're in southern Brazil. And southern Brazil has just had the opposite problem, just very, very heavy rains. It's drying out a little bit now. Farmers are concerned about diseases, rust, for example. In the state of Paraná, they have today about 120 cases of rust. Last time I calculated, that was like 53% of all the rust cases in Brazil. So I think the yields will be okay in southern Brazil, but it's going to cost the farmers more to control the rust. Now, some farmers are concerned that it's been too cloudy, too overcast, lack of sunshine, may sort of trim their soybean yields. We'll see if that happens or not. But it's been extreme in both sides of Brazil, and it's actually upside down compared to a normal year. Normally, central Brazil gets too much rain, and southern Brazil is where you might have a drought. Well, it was just exactly opposite this year.
In the past, I've seen numbers for Brazil, and I don't recall yours, but they were 100 million metric tons generally out of USDA. I've seen things as high as 102 million metric tons. That was at the beginning of the season. They've been cut back. I've seen numbers down around 97 million metric tons. Can you put those all in context historically and then where you stand today?
Sure. Last year, they did 96.4 million tons of soybeans in Brazil. Now, I'm currently at 97. The highest I went was 100, and then I backed it down to 97. Basically during the month of December when it was very hot and dry for the early maturing soybeans in Mato Grosso. The range right now is from about 104 down to maybe 93, 94. So there's a wide range, you know, a 10 million ton range. CONAB, which is the equivalent of USDA in Brazil, they currently have the soybean crop at 102.4 million tons. But most analysts in Brazil have their estimates now below 100 million tons. And depending on the weather going forwards, right now I'm kind of neutral going forwards. I think these rains will stabilize the situation, especially for the later planted or later maturing soybeans. But the rains came too late for the early maturing soybeans. They just were filling pods during a very hot and adverse period, and they just have very, very, very low yield prospects in parts of Mato Grosso. You got to remember, when they don't have rain or cloud cover, it gets really hot. So central Mato Grosso was 100 to 104 degrees for long periods of time. The soil has a very low water-holding capacity because normally their problem is too much rain, not too little. So under those temperatures and those type of soils, if you don't get a rain within 4, 5, 6, 7 days, you got a lot of moisture stress developing on the beans. And that's what happened to the early maturing and early planted beans in Mato Grosso. Some of the guys replanted, you know, once or twice trying to get a crop, and they still didn't do very good.
Still, on the grand scheme of things, you have this set up as an historically large crop for Brazil.
Yes, it's a record crop by a couple million tons, and I still think it will be a record crop. The only way we get below last year's 96 million would be, you know, the second half of January starts to dry out again, and then February stays dry again, and who knows if that's going to happen or not.
And then we need to discuss the other South American areas, Paraguay and Argentina.
Now, Argentina is doing very well. Last year, they produced about 61 million tons. They cut back on the acreage, so I have them now at 58 million tons, about the same as USDA. Everybody's around 58, 59 million tons. Their weather has been very good, except for the northern provinces. The northern areas have been getting really, really torrential rains. All the local rivers are in flood stage. That area is generally very flat, poorly drained, so I'm sure there's a crop waiting to be planted there. Now, those northern provinces of Argentina plant about 2 million hectares of soybeans and about 500,000 hectares of corn. And as of a week ago, they were maybe 50% planted. So they were getting some planted, but it's getting very late. Now, the planting window in northern Argentina, you can stretch it to maybe the end of January, but that's really stretching it. So they hope it's going to dry out here pretty quick, so they have time to finish planting. So I'm actually neutral to higher from my estimates in Argentina. So Argentina might go up a little bit and, you know, might compensate for some of the losses in Brazil. In Paraguay, they've been getting, actually Paraguay's had more rain than anybody else. Really, really heavy rains. In the capital of the country, Asuncion, currently there's like 130,000 people out of their homes along the Paraguay River. But that's kind of away from the main soybean producing area. But there's been a lot of rust in Paraguay. They are harvesting their early beans right now. And in Paraguay, you're allowed to plant two crops. So they will be planting a second crop of soybeans as soon as the first crop is harvested. So I think Paraguay will do okay if they control the rust. So that kind of remains to be seen.
So all in all, it remains a large crop out of South America, and global supplies will remain really big.
Yes, that's the bottom line. Even with these problems, it's still going to be a record crop out of South America. Not quite as big as what we thought when the season started, but certainly a record crop.
Hey, thanks, Michael. Michael Cordonier, of course, it was Soybean and Corn Advisor. He's out of Hinsdale, Illinois. You can hear him again anytime you'd like on our website at WILLAG.org. When I return, we'll talk about the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass. He's at Agrible from right here in Urbana-Champaign. This is Illinois Public Media.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
It's National English Toffee Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1800, the first soup kitchens in London were opened to serve the poor. In 1823, Alfred Wallace was born. Wallace was a British naturalist who developed a theory of natural selection independently of Charles Darwin. In 1825, Eli Whitney died. Inventor of the cotton gin, he also developed the concept of mass-producing interchangeable parts. Whitney introduced the idea into the manufacture of muskets for the U.S. government. In 1956, Greenleaf Pickard died, a U.S. electrical engineer. His invention of the crystal detector was one of the first devices widely used for receiving radio broadcasts. In 1997, Melvin Calvin died, an American biochemist. He was one of a team that used carbon-14 isotopes as a tracer to map the complete route that carbon travels through a plant during photosynthesis, starting with the absorption of atmospheric carbon dioxide to its conversion into carbohydrates and other organic compounds. The Calvin group showed that sunlight acts on the chlorophyll in a plant to fuel the manufacturing of organic compounds rather than on carbon dioxide, as was previously believed. And in 1998, Walter E. Dimer died, an American businessman. He accidentally invented bubble gum in 1928 while experimenting with recipes for a chewing gum base. By the way, the very first batch was pink, the color that remains to this day. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. Eric Snodgrass is here from AgriBull. Eric, we've had a lot of rainfall in the Midwest. Can you tell me about conditions here and some of the flood waters and what it means for additional precipitation?
The big chunk of the Midwest right now is experiencing some pretty nasty flooding. The Mississippi River is not doing too well. Neither are its tributaries. Some locations are at like 600% of normal rainfall for the last 30 days. So any additional rain that we get or snow that we get is really going to cause some problems over the next couple of days. So, yeah, a lot of standing water in those fields.
And then if you move to the West Coast, they've had a lot of rainfall as well, but they kind of need it, I think.
Basically, the jet stream has shifted south. It was kind of impacting the Pacific Northwest, and now it has shifted south over the last several days, and that's basically bringing a big stream of moisture in off the Pacific, and it's plowing into California, bringing lots and lots of needed rain. The problem is when that rain comes too quickly after being so dry and having so many fires, there's a big risk for landslides and mudslides, and certainly the flooding risk is very high, as I'm sure you've been seeing in the news. So California is kind of under the gun right now in terms of precipitation.
And then come back here to our part of the world. It looks like we're going to get maybe some snow and then cold.
Yeah, so we basically have our first system lifting out today, and it's bringing us this chance of scattered showers across Illinois, Indiana, Ohio for most of the day today. Then there's a second system that's coming kind of out of Texas Panhandle region. It's going to kind of hook south and then come straight up into kind of where the Ohio River and the Mississippi River meet. That puts a big chunk of Illinois on the northwest side of that low pressure center, which means we're going to get some snow out of the system. First time we've seen snow in downstate Illinois and parts of Indiana since November. So this is going to be interesting. That arrives midday Saturday and snows into the evening on Saturday evening. So it's what follows that's also pretty amazing. We have our first real shot of cold air. I'm talking maybe some single-digit lows Sunday, Monday, and then another shot of cold air on Tuesday and Thursday. So this will be some chilly air that we haven't seen the likes of since, you know, the heart of last winter, which if you remember last winter, parts of it were bitterly cold in the Midwest. So yeah, we're looking for some cold air to finally arrive this week and maybe stick around through the rest of January.
Well, let's go to warmer climes. But first, how many inches of snowfall do you think will be around?
That's a good question. So soil temperatures are finally below freezing in the top, you know, inch or so. And so some of this is going to stick after it kind of gets here and starts to accumulate. And we're looking for probably a band of 1 to 3 inches, maybe stretching from southwestern Illinois. So let's say St. Louis through the kind of central Illinois and then pushing over toward northern Indiana. There might be a patch in there of 4 inches, just depending on the location of the best banding of the snow. But at least 1 to 3 inches, a good coating of snow, and it'll stick around for a few days because of the cold temperatures.
And now South America, what's the weather forecast look like?
Yeah, great. So in South America, we've been focusing on the kind of Brazil's northern growing regions versus their southern. So Mato Grosso, we've been talking about, it's been drier than average. But over the last 15 days or so, they've had several big rain events, which has been great to kind of catch them up on precipitation. So they're making some progress. The South is looking really good in terms of rainfall. So this, again, spells a pretty good year out of Brazil in terms of total amount of soybeans that they're going to be producing. So catching up in the northern parts of Brazil.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yep.
Eric Snodgrass is with AgriBull from right here in Urbana-Champaign. Joins us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Up next, Commodity Week with our special guest, Corey Melby from Brazil. He'll tell us all about production and prospects for the soybean and the Safrinha corn crop.